All right, let's join together for prayer. Our Heavenly Father, again, thank you for these times that we have had to spend in your Word, especially in studying the inspiration of your wisdom that you have given these writers. And we just pray for your blessing upon us again tonight as we finish out the book, and as we finish out these lessons, again studying your wisdom and the blessing of your Spirit upon our hearts. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Tonight we're going to take Proverbs chapter 31. Proverbs 31 is divided up into two sections. After the introduction of verse 1, we have verses 2 through 9. An open letter of King Lemuel's mother to him about how he ought to conduct himself in words of wisdom. But also verses 10 through 31 is the famous and popular section entitled The Virtuous Woman. And this is, again, King Lemuel's mother writing to him, sharing with him about his own personal life, as well as who the virtuous woman is. And I think every mother wants her son to marry a virtuous woman. And, of course, the answer to the text tonight is a virtuous woman who can find, and that's true. They're very, very few. But she wants her son to be aware of what a virtuous woman is. So tonight, Proverbs chapter 31, verse 1, it says, "The words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him." Now there is a difference in translation, just as it was in chapter 30 of the words of Agur. The term utterance, in the phrase utterance which his mother taught him, is the Hebrew word masa, and it is also the name of a place, but the word itself means an utterance or speech or message, but it is also the name of a place in Arabia. And so many believe that that it can be translated, and many top scholars do translate it, the words of King Lemuel of Masa, from his mother as she taught him. There are two schools of thought depending on which translation you want to follow. Some believe that King Lemuel is Solomon, and that is the name of which Bathsheba called him. And so it would be the words of King Lemuel. The word Lemuel means with God, and so she believing that God was with her son and her son was with God, and she chose to name him Lemuel, that it was also for King Solomon. And this is from Bathsheba to King Solomon, and these are her utterances and speech to him. The reason that a lot of people translate King Lemuel to be Solomon is because there are no kings in Judah or Israel by the name of Lemuel, and so or Jewish history. And so they believe this is Solomon, and many top contemporary scholars translate it that way. Others believe, if you're going to follow the other translation, that it's not the word utterance, but Masa, that this is King Lemuel from Arabia, where Masa is the territory, which is where Agur came from in chapter 30. So it depends how who you want to ascribe this to. It's either Lemuel being King Solomon, and this is from Bathsheba to her son, or King Lemuel is a king that we know nothing about, but he did exist from the area of Masa in Arabia. Any way you want to look at it, it's in the scriptures, it's canonized and believed to be inspired by God with the words of wisdom for us to learn by. So this is from a mother to her son who is a king. And she starts off in verses 2 through 9 by saying, "What, my son?" The word "what" is just a phrase that is used to say, "What can I say?" Instead of saying that long phrase, they just use the word "what." It's really in the sense of, "What can I say, my son? And what can I say, son of my womb? And what can I say, son of my vows?" Now that's very interesting. She's talking to her son, the one whom she has given birth to, but also the one over whom she has made vows. So she, apparently, much like Hannah with Samuel, she made a vow and dedicated this son to the Lord. If indeed it is Bathsheba, and she's talking about Solomon, you know that their first, David and Solomon's first child had died from the judgment of God because of their adultery. But now, when Solomon is born, she made a vow and dedicated him to the Lord. And in light of her sin and in light of the judgment of God, she had vowed that Solomon would belong to the Lord, would be with God, and God would be with him, and that she is very sensitive now to the areas of morality and on marriage and the correct way of doing things. So she is, whoever this woman is, if it's the mother of King Lemuel of Arabia, or whether Lemuel is a nickname for King Solomon by Bathsheba, she's talking to her son, the son of her womb, and the son of my vows. So she has dedicated this man to the Lord, and she's finalizing and giving her expression as to how she wants him to live his life. She says, verse 3, "Do not give your strength to women." Well, that's just a point-blank word of wisdom from a mother to her son. Don't give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. As we all know, there are activities and there are people and there are things that will take all of our time and all of our strength. And she sees that the main trap for a son would be to give his strength and time and efforts to women. And it's not that the king is not supposed to take care of his a woman or wife or whatever the case may be, but she's talking about just in a general sense of how men are with the ladies, is that they give them their strength and their finances and all of their time, and everything is consumed. And so basically, stay as a king, as a person in position of leadership, do not give yourself over to those indulgences that are going to take all of your strength and all of your time. And as a matter of fact, in a moment she's going to talk about it, intoxicating wine. All the different elements of life that you can indulge yourself in that is going to impair your judgment, take all of your strength and affect your mind, and all these different elements that, as good as they are within their proper use and proper setting, you can indulge yourself and lose your balance as to what life is all about. Yes, sir. Right. That's right. That's why I say, you know, for a man to have his woman, so to speak, is a good thing. But to be overindulgent and to give all of your strength and all of your time, eventually it's going to catch up with you and it's going to destroy. Verse 4. "It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted." And so, again, we're talking here about the indulgences. Is that if you're in a position, and she sees him as a king, if you're in a position of responsibility, which actually every man is to a certain degree, is you're not to give yourself over to things that are going to affect your judgment. And we know of many politicians in our system. We know of many leaders in our system, whether it be church or political, that have given themselves over to the indulgences, whether it be women or drink, alcohol or gambling or whatever the case may be, that has been destructive. It has impaired their judgment. They cannot make the proper decisions that come with the responsibilities. And this goes with the heads of the household too. It can be a husband, it can be a father. Of course, we all know, we're all aware of the alcoholism, how it can impair judgment and responsibility and even destroy a family. So we're talking here about a mother to her son relating to him the responsibilities of having a clear mind and not to be self-indulgent in any of the areas that's going to rob you of your strength and your bearings, your decision-making, especially when it's going to affect the afflicted. Because here's a king who is basically responsible from God for the afflicted people. Afflicted people, are the poor people and the oppressed, are going to come to him and look for justice. And if he's intoxicated, inebriated, has his thinking, he's got a hangover and he just wants to get over with it and he doesn't want to mess with people, the people who are the less fortunate, they are going to suffer for it. Plus his own life is going to be destroyed. So, and then verse 6 it says, give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. It's kind of an interesting phrase for someone who is giving wisdom to her son. I would think that she would say, stay away from strong drink and make sure you're not responsible for giving it to anybody else. It's kind of interesting. She says, for those who are perishing, those who have rejected the ways of the Lord, those whose lives are destroyed, and they're so miserable and they will not turn their hearts over to the Lord, let strong drink be for them. Let it be the ones who are about ready to die, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Let it be for those who have rejected wisdom. Kind of an interesting presentation. Verse 8. Open your mouth for the speechless, in the cause of all who are appointed to die. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and the needy. Very difficult thing for a politician or king to do, or a leader to do. We know leadership today is very much influenced by the big corporations, the monies, the important people and influential people, and the poor and the needy usually are not on the agenda unless it has some kind of effect on one's political future. Somebody can make a case for it and get some kind of political gain. But usually the people who are non-influential usually don't get any of the attention. Well, she's giving advice to her son as to use your position to help the needy. They are dependent on you. Judge righteously. When you hear cases come before you, you should be the one speaking up for those who can't speak for themselves. I think it's kind of interesting with all the funeral and all the to-do about Princess Diana, how everybody loved her because she was in a position of royalty, and yet she was a spokesperson for and helped the cause of the poor. Yet she was in a position of royalty. And of course, they used that to kind of blast the royal family over in Britain because the royal family seems to stay separate from everybody else. Yet Princess Diana was one who was of royalty that went right down to where the poor people and the hurting people were, and not only represented them, but also helped them. And so this is a picture of what this king's mother is saying, is that you are royalty, you are in a position as king, you hear cases, you make judgments, speak for those who can't speak for themselves. Act for those who need your help. Don't push them aside and say you're nobodies and you're in poverty, so just get lost, you know. You take up the cause of the poor and the oppressed, and not treat them like they're second-class citizens. Good advice for him. And we've studied that both in the prophets as well as throughout the Psalms and Proverbs, that those kings who did not judge righteously, their kingdoms, their political futures fell. And it's not because they didn't take care of the rich, but because they didn't take care of the poor. And God made sure that their rule and reign was ruined. Now verses 10 to 31. The virtuous woman. This is one of the more around Mother's Day, and you hear this a lot on the radio, Bible studies on the virtuous woman from Proverbs chapter 31. So we're going to read through verses 10 to 31, and this is called in Hebrew an acrostic proverb. Acrostic means that each verse, as we know it, as they are numbered, the first word of each verse begins with, for instance, the verse 10, the first word begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The second verse, which would be verse 11, the first word of that verse starts with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And verse 12 is the third letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So it's kind of interesting that the virtues of the virtuous woman is put into a poem. It's an acrostic poem, where the writer, the first word of each line begins with the Hebrew letter in order. It's called an acrostic poem. But verse 10 begins, "Who can find a virtuous wife?" The word wife is the word for woman. But the word virtuous is a very interesting word. Kalil is the Hebrew word, and it has to do with strength or firmness. Strength and firmness in the sense of being strong enough to stay steady, continuous, and devoted. It is also translated amongst the Hebrew people as stable. So you can see a devotedness and a stability and a firmness there. Faithfulness is another word this word is used for. So you see a strength to stay steady. Not so much a strong woman, you know, that enters into the muscle contest for women and the bodybuilding and that's not what it means for strength. It means the strength to stay devoted, the strength to stay stable, the strength to stay faithful. And so, the answer to the question, because it is in a question form, who can find a virtuous wife or a virtuous woman? Somebody who's strong, devoted, stable, faithful. And the question in Hebrew expects an answer of hard to find. Who can find a virtuous woman? That's right. They're very difficult to find. So this is a mother to her son about the kind of woman that he ought to marry, the kind of woman that he ought to find. And this is her description of a virtuous woman. It's very interesting as we read through her. For her worth is far above rubies. And so, in a world where men love money and security and material possessions, what she's saying is a virtuous woman, a woman of strength and stability and firmness and faithfulness and devotedness, is worth more than jewels and money and all the material things that a royalty could ever ask for. So she goes on to say, "The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain." It's kind of interesting. He puts his trust in her. Why? Because she's strong, strongly devoted, firm, stable. He doesn't have to worry about leaving home. This verse presents the fact that he can leave home and go do what he has to do, and he knows that she's going to be doing what she has to do for the household, and he doesn't have to worry about coming home after a business trip of 2 or 3 days and find her half intoxicated and hasn't done anything for 3 days. I mean, you know, that the fact that there's a team there, though the team might be broken up, is that both are working for the same goal, and he already trusts that though he is not physically present, he knows that when he comes back, whether it be at the end of the day or the end of his trip or whatever the case may be, is there's going to be gain towards the household. It's a team effort, though they be separate. He trusts her. He trusts because of her strength to be devoted and faithful, and she is committed to the teamwork to provide for the household, is that he trusts. He trusts safely in her that when he comes home, that the household is going to be better off, is going to be gained to the household, and there's not going to be loss, even though he might be gone for an hour or two or for a day or whatever the case may be. When he's back, the household is better off because of her devotedness to the things that she's been doing. Verse 12, "She does him good and not evil all the days of her life." Boy, there's one. You could stop right there and say, a virtuous wife, who can find? She does him no evil. She doesn't cause him adversity. But she does him good all of the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. So she's looking, and we're going to see just various fabrics and various articles that she is going to gather up and work with her hands. There's a. We're going to see pretty soon that she's going to be into real estate outside the household. She's going to be a swap meet operator. It doesn't say that a woman cannot work out of the home. Certainly, when we get into Titus, our study in Titus, we're going to see in the pastoral epistles that women are told to stay at home, but it doesn't say that they can't work out of the home or be involved in helping the home in this way. As she goes down to the merchant ships and she buys the new items coming off of the ships and she sells her goods, she's actually making things at home and is like a swap meet operator. She travels to various places selling her goods that she has made, and it begins with her own family first. She makes everything with her own hands, goes and buys the materials, the candles, the clothing, whatever her family needs. She goes and buys them and makes them with her hands. Now, the thing that I'm impressed with the virtuous woman in this context, as we read through here, there was a woman, and I know you can get obsessed with this, and maybe I do, but I met a woman down in Old Orchard several years ago that I used to work for. Her full-time thing, all day long, was to save coupons. I mean, you know, her whole table was just filled with boxes of coupons. And I know nowadays you can really get into it. You can join these clubs where people pass coupons across the United States, you know, and do you have this, and yeah, do you have this? And she was telling me, and I forgot, it was some outrageous amount that at the end of the month they only spend $20 for food for the whole month, or, you know, something where she's got double coupons for everything. She plans all of her meals based on the coupons that she has. And in essence, the principle that I enjoyed about that is, and she was an older woman, and she was not a professional person, but she was more on the elderly side. The thing that impressed me about it is, that's the same as working. You take somebody today, a married woman, family woman that has small children, and she has a job to help the household, but by the time she drops the kids off to the caretaker, you know, and goes and does her job, by the time she pays for her food, her gas, her car, her clothing for her work, and pays for the nursery and the babysitter, how much money really has she earned from the family? They're finding out, not very much. She almost has to spend the same amount of money just to be able to go to work. So really, what have you helped? And then I look at a situation like this. Here's a woman who does not have a job, you know, quote unquote. Yet she's saving her family hundreds of dollars a month by saving coupons at home. Now, isn't that the same thing? You see, by saving your family money so that they don't have to spend money, are you not earning money for your family? The answer is yes, you see. Here is a virtuous woman that goes and buys the different articles needed for two things. Number one, for her household, whatever the needs are. And number two, so that she can take these articles and sell them. And she goes to great lengths to find the avenues to sell these things. See? It says, she seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Now, I know we joke around about it. You know, a woman here might drive to a Atascadero to save 20 cents on a can of coffee or something. You know, we joke around how women like to go to various places just because of sales. Now, I know you can get obsessed with that too and buy things just because they're on sale. You're not saving money. But the woman who is conscious of the fact that our family needs these items. The virtuous woman seeks out where to get the best value. And the text says she's like the merchant ships. Merchant ships will sail from port to port. And she'll go from place to place, also keeping in mind how much expense that she's spending while she's gathering the best deal that she can find. But at the same time, in context, we also have to see that while she's traveling looking for the best value, she's also taking her goods with her and selling them, maybe even a barter system, you know. Maybe her family's going to need candles. But she has a coat that she made. And she realizes that the coat cost her very little, and even that maybe she got from some sale someplace, and she'll exchange the coat for some food that she needs. And it's just a constant thing. The thing that impresses me about the virtuous woman, I don't see why it can't be a virtuous man as well, that sees that by saving money and working at the point of not having to spend money for the necessities that you need is a tremendous help to the family. That's the impression that I get about this. She's not relegated to home sweeping floors. You know, she is involved just like the husband is, just like the man is, as to how the gain of the household, and sometimes you can gain by saving. So she is like the merchant ships, and she brings her food from afar. She might even plant her own garden. But wherever you can find the best value that's going to help the family, that's what she does. Now remember, her husband safely trusts in her that when he comes home, the family is going to have gain because of her. What is she doing? She's out trying to find the best deal, you know. She's working with her hands, the things that are necessary for the household and what can be sold. So she's doing the same thing that the man is. She might not have a, quote, professional job. But she certainly is earning money and helping the family by not having to spend money and making it herself or finding the best value. And certainly if you do have a career, if you do have a job, you just don't have time to hunt those things down. What it says is the virtuous woman does that. It says in verse 15, she also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maid servants. Over in the east, when the workers would take the middle of the day off because of the heat factor, they would have to get going early in the morning. The virtuous woman gets up while it's still dark, provides the breakfast, provides the meal for not only her household but for her maid servants as well, make sure that they have the food and they're ready to go. Because they did have to leave early because the middle of the day they just didn't work because of the heat. So they started very early in the morning, sometimes before even sunrise, in some of the work. Well, she would get up prior to that and make sure that when the workers got up, she had the food ready and everything was ready to go. And not only for her family, but for those of her maidservants and her helpers as well. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. Oh, she's in real estate. See? How is this going to... She's not in real estate to be an agent, but it says here, she considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. It's interesting. She's looking at it for how can I plant a vineyard? That's going to help my family with food, and I can sell from it. And she's just constantly involved. As you can see, this is not a woman that sits home and sweeps floors. The virtuous woman of the Lord is very much involved in the finances and the gain of the family and what the family needs. Very important part of the family. So she considers a field, she buys it, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. Now the girding here, I've even heard it translated, I mean, presenting the fact that she works out and aerobics are for the virtuous woman. What it's really saying in the Hebrew text about girding up her arms and her legs, it's pulling the robe up. You've heard me say this before about men, because men wore robes too. Well, gathering up the robe and pulling it up between your legs and tying it around your waist so that you can bend over and be doing work, and the robe will not be cumbersome. That's what it's talking about. It says that she takes her robe and binds it up through her legs and around her waist. And basically, it would be our equivalent to our phrase, she rolls up her sleeves and gets to work. See? She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She sees that what she has to plant, to grow, to sell, and to make, that it is good, that people need it. And she's motivated by it. Even when it comes to night. Now, we followed her from early morning to taking care of the household and feeding and everything, to all of her busyness in the day, whether it be purchasing a field and planting a vineyard and going down to the docks and seeing what the ships have to come in, and she'll go down and she'll buy the newest, latest thing that's on sale that the household needs all day long. So when it comes nighttime, she sees the benefit of all this. The merchandise is good. And she doesn't stop even at nighttime. She's still going. Her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. And so basically, these are two elements that have to do with weaving and have to do with the preparation of yarn. And so at nighttime, when she can't be out on the streets and doing different things, this is yarn preparation, getting the yarns and the threads ready to weave and to make the clothing for her household. Verse 20, she extends her hands to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. So it's not just her family. It's the poor and the needy as well. She has extra. She's even concerned about them. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. It's not just the scarlet color that is the emphasis here, but the fact that she has the best of clothing for her household. And when somebody says winter is coming on and snow is coming on, she's not afraid of that. She has spent her summer times making clothing. She's woven the clothing. She's made her own clothes, or she's bartered or done whatever she's had to do to buy clothing for her family in the winter. She's already planned for the winter coming. She did this in the summertime so that when somebody says, well, the storm's coming, first winter storm's coming, all she has to do is pull it out of the closet, so to speak, and say, I'm not afraid of cold weather because I've prepared for my family and I've prepared for warm clothing for them. Verse 22, she makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. So she even makes her own clothing. This is a very industrious young lady here. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits amongst the elders of the land. And so her husband, as you know, the leaders of the town would sit at the gates and they would discuss. This is not the local barbershop. This is down at the gate where, you know, they make the city decisions. It would be equivalent to our city council meetings where judgments are made and people are, bring their problems or questions or whatever the case may be. Well, her husband is known in the gates when he sits amongst the elders of the land. Now, it's kind of interesting because you can pass right by this and says, well, it sounds like he's right up there too. He's a responsible man in the community. Well, it's kind of interesting because from the Hebrew text, as it is in English, if you look real close, it says her husband is known. You know, instead of saying, well, this is Bill Klein's wife. It's because she is the virtuous woman, you see. It's, oh, that's Patty Klein's husband, you see. That's what the text is saying. He's down at the gates, and they say, oh, that's Patty's husband. You know, that's the virtuous woman. When people see her husband, they recognize her, you see. They say, oh, yeah, oh, I know her. She's a virtuous woman. And he's the guy sitting down at the gate. He's one of the responsible men of the city. Yet his wife, he's known by his wife. I think it's very interesting. Of course, the reverse of that can be true. As we all know, we've seen that too. When a wife is not virtuous, say, oh, there's, you know, what's her name's husband? But the virtuous woman is kind of interesting. It's mentioning her husband, but it's her husband that is known, you see. The attachment is with the virtuous woman. So it's indicating that the husband, who is an upstanding citizen in the community and involved with the responsible decision-making processes, is that he is there also because of her virtue. She's like the backbone. It's her virtue that makes the husband be virtuous, you see. Verse 24. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes, that is, belts, for the merchants. So see, as the merchants come in and sell their goods, and even they come in by ship, she goes down to get the best deal. Oh, I hear the ship's coming in this morning, you know. So she's down there at the dock, and she's got everybody fed, and she's down there, and she's seen what's coming off the ship, and she's buying the best deals and the best goods. Well, she's also got her things, you know. Like I say, could be an exchange here. We could have a swap meet going here. She could also sell her things to people. She could come home at night, not only getting and purchasing for the family clothing or merchandise or goods or food for the family. She could actually come home with goods plus money. She could come home at night having made more than when she left, and the household still have everything that it needs, because she has taken with her the clothing and things that she has made herself. And who knows on the way? You know, who knows what kind of deal you can strike with a merchant? You say, hey, I need some of that French bread, you know, that fresh French bread. What do you got? You know, it's a buck a loaf. Well, how about this? You know, this garment, this sash, this belt that I made for the robe. I like that. How about an exchange, you know? And so it didn't cost the family anything other than the cost of the material that she had to make the belt with. And so she's saving the family money. And that's how she thinks. She's thinking constantly towards what can be the best for the household. And she's devoted to it. She is firm. She is faithful and she is stable. Verse 25. Strength and honor are her clothing. Now we just got through talking earlier in verse 22 that even her own clothing she makes. And it's some pretty good stuff. She doesn't walk around in rags. She's got some nice, you know, clothing. But what people notice about her is not her jewelry or her clothing, but her character, her integrity. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. So in other words, she's not going to rejoice at the end of the day because people noticed what a nice dress she made for herself. You know, her rejoicing is going to come because of her integrity, because of her character, because of the honor that's given to her. Now I think that's interesting because it's just one little verse here that both Paul and Peter took. Peter in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, he talked about women in the church. And he talked about a woman who's married to a non-believing husband or a disobedient husband. That she is to win him over through her integrity and character, through her personal relationship with the Lord, not the outward adornment of clothing and the braiding of hair and jewelry. In other words, she's not trying to win her husband over by seduction. He is won over by when he sees the quality of her life, her inward beauty, so to speak. As Peter mentioned it. Now, Paul mentioned it too in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 19 and 20, about women in the church, that godly women who go to church, to Christian fellowship, in order to worship the Lord, should not be wearing clothing that's going to draw attention to themselves. They ought to be wearing clothing and conduct themselves that are according to women who profess godliness. And he says that the women ought to, should be the hidden person of the heart, the inner beauty. That is the character and integrity of a woman. Well, this text tells us that strength and honor are her clothing. That's what she's clothed with, the inner person, the integrity of the heart. She shall rejoice in time to come. Verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom. So now we're talking about speech here. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She's kind and she's wise. Now again, making reference to 1 Peter 3, 1-6 and 1 Timothy 2, 19 and 20, both Paul and Peter says that she should not be attempting to win her husband over by preaching at him. It should be a quiet spirit. Both Paul and Peter used a word for quietness. A quiet spirit is not one that's just sit over in the corner and be quiet. The quiet spirit is a spirit that does not assert itself onto other people. And so I think it's kind of interesting that here it's talking about a woman who's not loud, she's not clamorous, but when she does speak, it's wisdom. And the law of kindness is on her tongue. So it doesn't talk about a talkative woman, but it talks about a woman that when she does speak, it is in wisdom and kindness. Verse 27, she watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Now, amongst all of these activities, she looks over the household. This is kind of like an overview. What is needed? How are the children doing? How are they conducting themselves? I mean, all the way from behavior to the needs of the household. She takes a general inspection over everything, and she has no idle time. She might have a time to sit down and relax for a few minutes, but if there's no idleness. She's always looking like a checklist in the heart, looking over the condition of the household. What is needed? See? Verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Speaking to this virtuous woman. Many daughters have done pretty good, but this virtuous woman is at the top of the list. This is the one that is the backbone to the household. And I think it's kind of interesting, too, in Proverbs, where does it talk about the virtuous man? See, it had mentioned to us about verse 23 that her husband is known in the gates. The woman, no matter how strong the man is and no matter how successful he is, if there is not a virtuous woman or close to it in the household, the backbone of the family, the undermining is there. And you become frustrated, and it's picturing here that in our society today, even the woman is put down. You know, the man is the strong one; he's the professional; he's this and he's that. But without the virtuous woman, and it doesn't say anything here about a career. It just says she runs the household, which also includes buying and selling and whatever the case may be. She takes care of the household, and her husband is known. His success is drawn off of her diligent virtue in the household. And without that, you have a weakened household. No matter how strong the man is, the woman, and according to this text, and I've just mentioned it a couple of times, many say that the woman is the backbone of the family. And I believe that. Because without that backbone, it doesn't make any difference how strong the muscles are, you see. She takes care of the foundation and the running of the household and all of its needs. And without that, you don't have a household, no matter how successful the man is. So he says, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is passing. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. That's her secret. What is the secret of a virtuous woman? She fears the Lord. It's not that she's a professional household keeper. She's motivated by her fear and respect of the Lord. She knows that she has been put in charge by the Lord and has been given responsibilities for the household. And she fears the Lord. She has respect for the Lord. She serves Him in all that she does. She's a servant. I think it's kind of interesting that when Paul mentioned about himself and those who labored with him, he says, we're servants. We're bond servants of Jesus Christ. The virtuous woman sees herself as a bond servant of the Lord, and that is her task, that is her ministry, and she devotedly gives herself to it. She is stable. She's continuous. That is her career, no matter what she has to do for the good of the household. But the woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Verse 31. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. So, down at the gates where the husband is, the fruit of her own labor is going to come back to her. That's her reward. She's going to look over her household. Everybody's taken care of. All the needs are met. Her children praise her and bless her. Her husband gives her praise and says, if it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be where I am today. If it wasn't for her, you know, the household wouldn't be the way it is today. Everybody gives her the praise, and that's the fruit. That's the fruit that she gets, is the honor that she has acquired because of her character and because of her integrity. Because of her continuous devotedness, sacrificial giving, no idle time. From beginning before sunup and to even after sundown, she's continuously looking to the condition of her household as to what she can do for that and for her husband. I think it's an interesting text. The virtuous woman. That is King Lemuel's mother telling him, son, here's the woman. And she's telling him that charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. And be careful, son, that it's not the outward appearance that you go for, and you don't give your strength to women just because they're beautiful or good-looking or you're attracted to them. There's an inner quality about a woman that you are going to need that's going to make you and your household successful with you. And this is the kind of woman. They're hard to find, but this is a mother's advice to her son, which is very wise. It gives us also a picture of the Christian woman today, because again, the Titus text is mentioned about the woman ought to remain at home. And basically, the text is saying that it doesn't say that a woman can't work, but if she abandons her household and abandons the raising of the children just for a career sake, that's what the text is talking about. That's, financially, that might help the household, but then again, when you stop to think about it, it's probably not because of what you have to spend to have that career. But are you raising the children? Is the household being taken care of? No, I have a career. No, that's not what it's talking about. The virtuous woman can make money for the household by staying home and finding ways and even working with her own hands to buy the things, to make the things and sell things, to gain finances for her household and be there to take care of the household too. It doesn't mean she has to stay home. She can be out, she can buy property, she can work a vineyard, whatever the case may be. But her household is taken care of.